Welcome to the Shadowbane Podcast. Tonight, the narrative of Arthur Gordon Pym of Nantucket, the preface by Edgar Allan Poe.
Hello, everyone. This is Andrew Lister, writer and producer of the Shadowbane Podcast. What you're listening to right now is the very first episode of our classic Tales of Terror novel reading, where essentially we're going to take a book that falls into the genre of horror, science fiction, or suspense, and we are going to read it chapter by chapter alongside of a bit of a discussion where I sit down and kind of analyze different elements of the text and try to kind of break it down for you. This is a patron-only reward. For more information, go to patreon.com/shadowvane. We will be releasing a new episode about once a month, maybe a little bit kind of more frequently than that. It kind of depends upon how quickly I can get these done and out to you. And I really hope that you guys enjoy this. Not only do I do the writing and the producing for this show, I also spearheaded the Questionable Endeavor Network at questendnetwork.com, a collection of podcasts, articles, and streams, and just general geekiness. And I also am a host on Tuning Japanese at tuningjapanese.com, part of the Questionable Endeavor Network. But during the day, I'm a teacher. I teach high school, and I also teach college. This is my 10th year as an English teacher, and one of the reasons why I started Shadowbane was my love for writing, my love for reading, and kind of living these different stories that authors, some of my favorite authors, had written. And this whole idea of not only reading to you this story or these different stories chapter by chapter and then discussing them, it's just something I really enjoy doing. It's what I enjoy. It's why I enjoy teaching, and it's something that I'm really excited to bring to you, the fans, and I hope that you find the same enjoyment in the stories that we read as I do. So the very first novel we're going to read is Edgar Allan Poe's only novel, The Narrative of Arthur Gordon Pym of Nantucket, and it's one that's probably far less known than some of his other works, but it's still, I think, very interesting, even though, as we'll kind of see as we go through chapter by chapter and in my discussion, it's definitely not one of my favorite novels of all time by any means. But I think it's still a really kind of interesting and important piece of literature, given the fact that it's the only time he ever really tried to go into the genre of a full novel, rather than his normal mode of short stories or poetry. Before we get into the reading of the very first part of this novel, which is actually a preface before chapter one, I just want to say a few words about what you're going to be listening to, as well as then going into a biography of Edgar Allan Poe for those of you who maybe don't remember as much about him or just don't know in general much about his life. What you'll get here on these bonus episodes is a reading of a chapter, and it will probably have far less in the way of special effects than we have in a normal Shadowbane episode. A regular Shadowbane episode, whether it is the classic tale or whether it is an actual original, takes hours and hours and days of work of getting voice actors to read the lines, listening to them, checking and making sure and sending back rereads of lines. And this is something that is going to be more of just kind of like an audiobook sort of thing where I'll obviously go through and meticulously try to make it sound the best I can from my point of view of reading the book. But at the same time, I'm not going to go back through and put as many flourishes as you might find in a typical Shadowbane episode. We'll follow that with a discussion, as I mentioned before. I'll do some research on the novel, on the chapter, and give my own insights as an English teacher and professor as to what is going on. We'd love to hear what you think of each episode in the comment section underneath where we post each bonus episode. And now, a biography of Edgar Allan Poe. Poe was known as one of the most significant writers in American Gothic fiction, hell, in American fiction at all, in general. He was born on January 19, 1809, in Boston, Massachusetts, where he never really had the chance to get to know his parents at all. Both of his parents were actors. His father died very early in his life, and his mother, Elizabeth Arnold Poe, died of tuberculosis when Poe was only 3 years old. Unfortunately, as we kind of tell the story of Edgar Allan Poe, this won't be the first person that he will lose to this disease that was running pretty rampant across North America at this time. He was sent away, after his mother died, to live with John and Francis Allen, John was a well-known and respected tobacco merchant, and he didn't really care much for Edgar Allan Poe. Frances, his wife, on the other hand, loved Poe very much and treated him as if he were one of their own children. Poe began his writing career in his early teens, but the adults in his life discouraged his pursuits, John Allan most of all. Allan wanted Poe to work for his tobacco business, but Poe was far from interested. In 1826, Poe went to the University of Virginia, but even though he did well in school, his foster father didn't really provide him with enough money to keep going to the school. Poe then turned to gambling and ended up in debt, trying to raise enough money just to kind of keep going and get his education. After having left college, Poe was forced to return to the home of John Allan. But Poe soon found out that his fiancée at the time, Sarah Elmira Royster, had gotten engaged to someone else while Poe was gone away at college. This led Poe to move to Boston, and then eventually to join the army. During this time, Poe actually published his first bit of work, Tamerlane and Other Poems, in 1827. Also during this time, Poe's foster mother, Frances, would also die to tuberculosis. He then ended up at West Point, but he was kicked out within a year. Some say that he got himself kicked out just despite John Allan. He then traveled around to New York, Baltimore, Philadelphia, and Richmond. John Allan, however, would have the last laugh. He died and left Poe out of his will, giving him absolutely nothing. While in Baltimore, Poe fell in love with Virginia Clemm, who also happened to be his second cousin. The two eventually got married. She was only 13 years old at the time, and they had to falsify the court records in order for them to get married. Yeah, kinda gross, I know. Poe would become an editor for the Southern Literary Messenger, more on that later, where he wrote scathing reviews of other people's writing, giving him the nickname of the Tomahawk Man. At one point, he even accused Henry Wadsworth Longfellow of plagiarism, which angered just about everyone in America, considering that Longfellow was probably considered the first truly successful international American author. Poe would then publish more of his own work in that same magazine, including parts of his one and only novel, The Narrative of Arthur Gordon Pym. His problems with alcohol, however, would lead to him being fired from the magazine in 1837. Poe would go on to publish a number of classic stories and poems that I'm sure many of you have heard of, including The Fall of the House of Usher, The Telltale Heart, and his most well-known piece of literature, The Raven, which was published in 1845. The Raven was an instant success, and he would go around doing dramatic readings of the poem. However, he only received a total of $24 for the publication of that poem. Poe's bride, Virginia, would also succumb to tuberculosis, which was the inspiration for many of his works, including The Raven, Annabel Lee, and The Mask of the Red Death. Poe's final years were plagued by sickness and alcoholism. His last public appearance was on September 25th, 1849, where he was found on the streets of Baltimore. He was rushed to a local hospital where he died on October 3rd. His very last words were, "Lord, help my poor soul." There are a lot of theories as to what happened to Poe right before his death. Some people think it was a bout of alcoholism that led him to the streets to suffer. Some people think that he suffered from rabies, others epilepsy, or a congestion of the brain. My favorite is that some people believe that because the day that he was found was election day in Baltimore, that he was actually a victim of a political kidnapping. Essentially, people at that time would find people on the streets, they would drug them, give them liquor with some extra substances in them, and use them as repeat voters, changing their clothes and sending them to the polls to vote for their particular candidate. And he thought today's political system was corrupt. And unfortunately, that's the end of Poe's unfortunate, sad, yet successful life. And now on to the novel that we're going to be reading. A few notes. The first two chapters of the novel were actually, like I said, published in the Southern Literary Messenger, where Poe worked, in January and February of 1837. It was pretty common back then for novels to be published over time as individual chapters or stories in publications and magazines like this one. The reason was people were more willing to spend money on subscriptions to these magazines than they were to buy a whole novel or book. They had a wide variety in getting these, and they were cheaper than getting books. So writers actually made quite a bit more money selling their work this way at the time. This is, like I said, the only novel that Edgar Allan Poe ever wrote. And as it will become apparent, his talent seems to lie more with shorter fiction. The novel at time gets a little bit complex, and I feel that it is a little bit weaker compared to some of his other works. That being said, we see a lot of elements that we are probably familiar with Poe in this, as well as a couple of chapters that are just completely disturbing and disgustingly gross. Pym is a nautical tale, involving several different mishaps at sea. It's not uncommon to find novels about the sea at this time. Think back to novels like Moby Dick and other works by Melville at this time. It was pretty popular to write about going out onto the sea, going out onto the rivers. Mark Twain made a living talking about life on the river in stories like Huck Finn. However, Poe's work is quite a bit darker than you would expect in a Mark Twain or even a Herman Melville novel. After some early sailing adventures, our title character, Arthur Gordon Pym, hides himself on a whaling ship. In typical Poe fashion, things progressively get worse for our protagonist, leading to an odd and somewhat abrupt ending. But don't worry, we'll get there. The preface, which you're about to hear, was also published at the start and at the end in different versions. For the sake of this reading, we're going to put the preface at the beginning. It is a preface, after all, and we'll talk about why we did so when we get to our analysis at the end. All right, that's enough front-loading. Enjoy the episode. The Narrative of Arthur Gordon Pym of Nantucket. Preface. Upon my return to the United States a few months ago, after the extraordinary series of adventure in the South Seas and elsewhere, of which an account is given in the following pages, accident threw me into the society of several gentlemen in Richmond, Virginia, who felt deep interest in all matters relating to the regions I had visited, and who were constantly urging it upon me as a duty to give my narrative to the public. I had several reasons, however, for declining to do so, some of which were of a nature altogether private, and concerned no person but myself. Others not so much so. One consideration which deterred me was that, having kept no journal during a greater portion of the time in which I was absent, I feared I should not be able to write, from mere memory, a statement so minute and connected as to have the appearance of that truth it would really possess, barring only the natural and unavoidable exaggeration to which all of us are prone when detailing events which have had powerful influence in exciting the imaginative faculties. Another reason was that the incidents to be narrated were of a nature so positively marvelous that, unsupported as my assertions must necessarily be, except by the evidence of a single individual, and he a half-breed Indian, I could only hope for belief among my family and those of my friends who have had reason through life to put faith in my veracity, the probability being that the public at large would regard what I should put forth as merely an impudent and ingenious fiction. A distrust in my own abilities as a writer was, nevertheless, one of the principal causes which prevented me from complying with the suggestions of my advisors. Among those gentlemen in Virginia who expressed the greatest interest in my statement, more particularly in regard to that portion of it which related to the Antarctic Ocean, was Mr. Poe, lately editor of the Southern Literary Messenger, a monthly magazine published by Mr. Thomas W. White in the city of Richmond. He strongly advised me, among others, to prepare at once a full account of what I had seen and undergone, and trust to the shrewdness and common sense of the public, insisting with great plausibility that, however roughly, as regards mere authorship, my book should be got up, its very uncouthness, if there were any, would give it all the better chance of being received as truth. Notwithstanding this representation, I did not make up my mind to do as he suggested. He afterward proposed, finding that I would not stir in the matter, that I should allow him to draw up in his own words a narrative of the earlier portion of my adventures, from facts afforded by myself, publishing it in the Southern Messenger under the garb of fiction. To this, perceiving no objection, I consented, stipulating only that my real name should be retained. Two numbers of the pretended fiction appeared, consequently, in the Messenger for January and February 1837, and, in order that it might certainly be regarded as fiction, the name of Mr. Poe was affixed to the articles in the table of contents of the magazine. The manner in which this ruse was received had induced me at length to undertake a regular compilation and publication of the adventures in question. For I found that, in spite of the air of fable which had been so ingeniously thrown around that portion of my statement which appeared in the Messenger, without altering or distorting a single fact, the public were still not at all disposed to receive it as fable, and several letters were sent to Mr. P.'s address distinctly expressing a conviction to the contrary. I thence concluded that the facts of my narrative would prove of such a nature as to carry with them sufficient evidence of their own authenticity, and that I had consequently little to fear on the score of popular incredulity. This exposé being made, it will be seen at once how much of what follows I claim to be my own writing, and it will also be understood that no fact is misrepresented in the first few pages which were written by Mr. Poe. Even to those readers who have not seen The Messenger, it will be unnecessary to point out where his portion ends and my own commences. The difference in point of style will be readily perceived. A. G. Pym, New York, July, 1838. And there you have it. There is the preface to Arthur Gordon Pym of Nantucket. And we got a few things to talk about, I think, even though it is really short. We know it's a preface. Prefaces are typically fairly short. And let's get right into it. With regards to form, we get a letter here from Arthur Gordon Pym himself about his experiences. And I really kind of like that we're opening with a letter because we get a lot of information that I think in a lot of ways attempts to, A, give authenticity to the tale. It's supposed to be a novel that is fiction, but this preface really tries to go outside of that and make it seem like this is actually real. This actually happened. And for that particular time, it would have been a little easier to kind of gull people, to kind of make people actually believe that could this have possibly happened? And I think adding then to the horror and the suspense of the actual story. The second thing that this preface and the letter does is it gives us an idea of the main character's voice. Even though, as he says later on, he talks about how this is going to be written in a way by Edgar Allan Poe about his experiences, here we actually hear his voice. And we'll talk about what we learn about him and his voice a little bit later on. Some things good and some things not so good. And also, this letter kind of foreshadows the terrible tale that follows. Gives us an idea that, like, hey, you're about to hear some crazy stuff, and I want you to try to believe it, whether it sounds believable or not. And this is something that Poe did in other works. We see it in The Black Cat, where the narrator warns the reader that what's to come and kind of says that most people won't really believe it to be true. And it's something that is used by later authors, especially by H.P. Lovecraft, who was a true admirer of Poe's works. We see this used in the statement of Randolph Carter, for example, where at the very beginning, Carter is talking to a bunch of policemen about what happened to his close friend Harley Warren. And here we have a character who's trying to say, hey, you're going to hear some crazy things, but I promise you they're all very true. So we can see how this beginning, this preface to this novel, was influential for other writers later. As I'm sure you all remember from our introduction, I love how they mention both Edgar Allan Poe by name and the Southern Literary Messenger. Yes, it is part shameless plug, but it would have made sense, I guess. If he wants to make it sound real, he needs to have this narrator, this character of Arthur Gordon Pym, realize what he's doing, that he knows of this publisher and this publication that might actually take on his tale and tell it the way it needs to be told. It explains why Pym's story is written by Poe's hand and not his own. It also maybe lends some credence that this guy, Arthur Gordon Pym, actually did what he said he did, and gives some credence to the event actually happening. This also is something that we've seen in other literature, especially in American literature. My favorite example is of this kind of humble bragging is at the beginning of The Adventures of Huckleberry Finn by Mark Twain, where Twain says, "You don't know about me without you've ever read a book by the name of The Adventures of Tom Sawyer. But that ain't no matter. That book was made by Mr. Mark Twain, and he told the truth, mainly. There was things which he stretched, but mainly he told the truth." So Poe was setting the stage for Mark Twain to basically say, hey, you can read Huck Finn, but buy my book. And here with Poe, it's, hey, you know that guy named Poe? He's a great writer and a great worker for this magazine, so I asked him specifically to tell my story. It's a pretty bold and brilliant move on Poe's part, to be honest. And then there's that whole placement of the preface. So a preface is supposed to go at the beginning, but as I said before, in some editions, it was placed at the end. So there are some positives and negatives that really go with both choices. Let's say you put the preface at the start, where it is now. We know that our narrator, then, is going to live through the experience. This kind of undercuts the tension of the story in some way. However, if the preface comes at the end, we're left wondering if Pym will make it through all of his trials, which would definitely add to some of the tension. However, it then would take away from the idea that this story might be real. That's the positive of putting it at the beginning. Could this be real? Who knows? And speaking of realism, we talked about how we learn quite a bit about Pym in this book and his particular voice. One of the more troubling parts, I think, of this entire introduction is that small little bit where race kind of comes in. And this is a problem that becomes somewhat of an issue in some parts of the text, especially later on dealing with colors of black and white symbolically. On top of that, later on, we're introduced later on in the book to a dark-skinned tribe, and Poe uses some not-so-flattering descriptions to describe them. We get our first hints of some racist language here and some troubling language in a parenthetical. And here's the quote from earlier. "Another reason was that the incidents to be narrated were of a nature so positively marvelous that, unsupported as my assertions must necessarily be, except by the evidence of a single individual and he a half-bred Indian, I could only hope for belief among my family." So here we get this parenthetical of, no one will believe this story. There's only one person who actually knows it to be true, and he is a half-breed Indian, thus saying, well, his opinion doesn't matter because he's a half-breed Indian and not a person, in a way, is kind of how I have read that. So a little bit of troubling racism that we'll see here and some other elements maybe later on in the text. Amongst all the writing, I find the last paragraph probably the most interesting in its wording and in its implication. Here's from the text again. "This exposé being made, it will be seen at once how much of what follows I claim to be my own writing, and it will also be understood that no fact is misrepresented in the first few pages which were written by Mr. Poe. Even to those readers who have not seen The Messenger, it will be unnecessary to point out where his portion ends and my own commences. The difference in point of style will be readily perceived." As we know, Poe wrote this whole thing, preface included, so he had to go to some great lengths in order to change up the wording and this language so that Pym sounds so much different from the actual storytelling. This again lends some credence to the idea that we have two authors here. We have Pym at the beginning, and we have Poe throughout, recounting what Pym has gone through. We don't really get much here, but we do learn a little bit about Pym and his adventures. First of all, I'm curious as to more details about these, quote, extraordinary series of adventures in the South Seas and elsewhere. What does that mean? Why the South Seas? What has he done? What are these? What makes them extraordinary? I want to know. Another thing, apparently he's been pestered to tell his story, but something happened of a, quote, nature altogether private that has kept him anxious about opening up. It makes me want to know what specifically happened. What nature altogetherly private? How did it change? He also says he's telling the story from memory. So right off the bat, we have ourselves an unreliable narrator. And of course, there's the racism, which doesn't really endear him to the audience all that much, at least to a modern audience especially. And that's it. That's the preface to the narrative of Arthur Gordon Pym of Nantucket. I hope you guys have enjoyed. We'll be back soon with our reading of Chapter 1, actually getting into the story. We'll jump immediately in next episode with the story. We'll have that, and then we'll follow up with a little bit of discussion as to what is going on, what do we learn about the characters, stylistic things, allusions, other things that we notice, and just kind of talk about it. So if you enjoyed this, tell your friends. Tell them that they can listen to this by joining our Patreon at patreon.com/shadowvane, and just go check out our main feed. We'll be posting a preview here on our Patreon pretty soon. We're still waiting on a little bit of some audio for the next episode of 1692. As soon as that last bit comes in, we'll be releasing that, hopefully, this coming week. So thank you so much for joining us once again, and we will see you next time.
Thank you for listening to a classic tale of terror, the narrative of Arthur Gordon Pym of Nantucket, the preface by Edgar Allan Poe. This episode was produced and voiced by Andrew Lister. Classic Tales is a production of the Shadowvane Podcast. For more information, visit our website, shadowvane.net. Email the show at shadowvanecast@gmail.com, follow us on Twitter at shadowvanecast, or like us on Facebook at facebook.com/shadowvanecast. To further support our show, leave us a 5-star rating and review on iTunes, Stitcher, or wherever you listen to today's episode. To help provide monetary support, consider becoming a patron at patreon.com/shadowvane. We are also a member of the Questionable Endeavor Media Network. Visit questendnetwork.com for more podcasts like The Slasher Sanitarium, Tuning Japanese, The Rundown Wrestling Podcast, Raw Attitude Podcast, Geek and Gamer Guild, Pwn Stars, and our newest show, New Blood Rising. Illustrations and creative editing by Ray Williams III. Music by Kevin MacLeod. You can listen to more of his work at Incompetech.com. Until next time, dear listeners. Until next time.